Going Linux, episode 476, Introduction to Encryption.
Get your tech on, it's time to roll. Plug your cords in and take control. Say goodbye to the old routine. Linux is here, it's the future machine. No viruses.
Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want to send us feedback, you can email us at goinglinux@gmail.com, or you can send us a voicemail at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, Introduction to Encryption.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Larry.
You still on the operating system you've been on for a while?
Still rocking Manjaro. Still haven't broke it. And, it's doing really well. I was kind of concerned. I have been kind of preoccupied with real world stuff, and I forgot to update it for almost 2 weeks. And I said, "Oh, that's going to mess it up," you know, because they say you got anything Arch based, you got to keep right on top of it. I come up and it had updates. Hit update, restarted it. Just because that's my thing. I didn't have to, but it always says restart the, you know, you don't have to, but I did. Man, it ran fine. I haven't had a mumps issue except for that one thing way back when I realized that it told me to restart the change that something I had done and I didn't do it. And then I started having problems. I'm like, well, yeah. So read the instructions. How about you?
Yeah. Well, speaking of not having any problems, I've been running Linux Mint for quite a long time now, and I decided that rather than fresh install, which is what I normally do, I would upgrade. So I followed their upgrade. It's in the updater. You just go to the updater where you normally get your updates and hit edit, and right there it's upgrade. I click that. A few minutes later, it asked to reboot, and now I'm on 22.3. Went smooth as silk, and it is not all that different from the previous version, other than the menu. And I actually like this menu better than the other one. So yeah, it's good. And back to upgrading operating systems rather than replacing them is really refreshing.
Yeah, I have, of course, Arch uses a different update model, yeah. But I will say that I'm enjoying the KDE desktop a lot. They've really made it nice. But one of the things, strong things about Linux Mint is that they can make a bunch of changes. They do, nothing's ever going to jar you. Going
right.
What's going on? If you can use it 2 years ago, it's you'll be able to pick it right back up if you hadn't looked at it, because it might some pretty things around the corners or whatever, or things might work smoother. But as a general rule, they don't do anything crazy like some other said operating systems, Microsoft Windows. You know that that people are like, well, how do I use this? So. They like that stability thing, so they do a good job. And remember, back in the day, you had to reinstall from scratch. It's great that they got that sorted.
Yeah, I think it's been that way in a while, for a while, and it's something that I had hesitated to go back to. I remember when we first started using Ubuntu recording this podcast, we were upgrading rather than reinstalling, and it went fairly well. And then every once in a while there was some sort of glitch, so I just got in the habit of replacing, and when I switched to Mint, I did the same thing, but now that we're back on Mint, and they do a good job of making the upgrade process extremely easy. If you've used a Mac, it's as easy as it is on the Mac. It's really, really good. So I'm happy with it. That makes me smile.
Well, that's excellent. Yeah. And that makes me happy. I loved how things have gotten better. So this episode, we launch a series on encryption. We'll start with the basics, defining encryption and core concepts. This foundation will lead into upcoming episodes where we'll explore practical applications in Linux, such as securing files and network communications, and managing keys and protected volumes with built-in tools. While Linux is the focus, we'll briefly cover other operating systems to show that strong data encryption principles are universal.
Encryption. Defining that, it's the process of converting readable information into unreadable format to prevent unauthorized access. It is the foundational tool for ensuring digital privacy and security across the internet. The core concepts here are plain text is the original readable data or message. Ciphertext is the scrambled, unreadable version of the data after encryption. Now let's talk about the ciphertext for a second. So an algorithm, defining that, also known as a cipher, but these days I think most people have heard the term algorithm at least, it's the mathematical formula or recipe used to scramble the data in a predictable way. And the algorithm uses a key, which is a string of characters or bits used by the algorithm to lock or encrypt and unlock or decrypt the information. So some simple terms to get us started.
Okay, so let me see if I've got this straight, Larry. So say I'm sending you a letter that says, we're going to record on Sunday, but I don't want anybody to be able to read it. So
yeah, we want to keep that super secret. Yep.
Yeah, super secret. So I'll be using a program that uses an algorithm or cipher, which is just basically it's a secret string of characters or bits, and it's going to take all that information, scramble it, and then give me something that I cannot read without, it's going to encrypt it. Now I need to decrypt it. But since we have a super secret password, I'll send you this whole encrypted message that we're going to be recording on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And you will then take, since we both have the password, you know what the password I used to encrypt it. So then when you get the gobbledygook, you can use the same password to decrypt it and read, saying our super secret recording is Sunday. Is that basically right. A good way to describe it?
Yep. It sounds pretty complicated, but the software you use to do it makes it easy. So why don't you go ahead and describe how it works.
Okay. So encryption, a sender uses an algorithm and an encryption key to transform plain text into ciphertext. Transmission. The ciphertext is sent over a network. If intercepted, it appears as a random noise to anyone without a key. We wouldn't want them to know that we're recording on Sunday. Right. Okay. So then decryption. The authorized recipient, you, uses a corresponding decryption key to convert the ciphertext back into the original readable plaintext form. We encrypt it, transmit it, and decrypt it. That's basically how it works.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so let's talk about the main types of encryption.
Okay.
So there's symmetric encryption, which uses the same key for both the encryption and decryption. So when you send me this message, you have a key and I have the key, in this case generated by the password we use, and the same key unlocks it that locks it. It's fast and efficient for large volumes of data. However, you might need something a little more super secret than a symmetrical encryption. Common algorithms for encryption include things like AES, which stands for Advanced Encryption Standard, DES, and Blowfish. So I am not going to get into what those things stand for, but if you hear AES, that's the one that you hear most often, I think.
Yeah.
These days anyway. And then there's also DES and Blowfish. Asymmetrical encryption gives you that little extra security. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So the asymmetrical encryption is also known as public key cryptography. It uses a mathematically linked pair of keys, a public key, which is shared with everyone, and that's used to encrypt, and a private key, which is kept secret, and that's used to decrypt. So you get a secret message that's encrypted, and a secret private key, and a public key that everyone has access to. So the common algorithms for the asymmetrical encryption are things like RSA and ECC. ECC stands for elliptic curve cryptography.
I will say, Larry, that encryption is absolutely fascinating.
Oh, yeah. It can get pretty deep pretty quick.
Yeah. So if you remember, you made a, said there's a lot of links in this episode. That's mm-hmm. just the elementary homework, okay? I hadn't even got to the good stuff yet. But
yeah, we'll have those links in the show notes, of course.
But, you know, the common algorithms, I've heard of AES and I've heard of Blowfish. And back in the day, they used to have what they call key signing parties that I think was used for that that asymmetric encryption. You'd have a public key, and then you'd have a bunch of people sign it, I guess. Or I don't know exactly how that worked, but I know there was something that everybody would get the public key, and then you could have a private key, I think, and that you could send to people. So everybody had the public key, but they, a lot of people didn't have the private key.
Well, to keep things secure, I think the whole impetus behind having a signing party is so that you can be sure that the person that you're giving the private key to is who you think it is. So you would get together with them. In the early days, it was physical meetup where you would say, yep, I know you and I trust you, so here you go. Here's my private key. You give me your private key and we can exchange secure email. You know, as we moved on in time, video conferences and things like that took over for the physical meetups, but it's the same concept. You want to make sure that anyone you send the private key to is who you think they are and not somebody masquerading as them.
Yes. Okay, so let's go through some common applications just to kind of give you an idea how encryption is used. So we've got secure browsing. Websites that are using HTTPS use the TLS transport layer of security to encrypt data sent between your browser and the server. You see, that's pretty much the standard these days is the HTTPS.
Yeah, they've kind of forced that.
Yeah. Data at rest. Now, here's the one that's important. Encrypting files stored on hard drives, smartphones, and cloud storage to protect them if the device is lost or stolen. Very important, especially if you work for healthcare or law or anything like that. You'll hear that all the time. And then we have communication, and that's messaging apps like WhatsApp use end-to-end encryption, and it's shortened by E2EE, so basically end-to-end encryption. So that's, if you ever hear that, E2EE, that's what they're talking about. To ensure only the sender and recipient can read the messages. While these existing methods are cool and useful, the future of encryption is exciting with new developments and technologies constantly emerging.
Yeah, and as an example of that data at rest, if you've set up or purchased a new computer recently, you'll notice that you are asked whether or not you want to encrypt your hard drive. And that's what it's talking about. It's encrypting the data at rest on your hard drive. In the early days, you weren't asked. They just put the data onto your hard drive unencrypted. And if you wanted encryption, you had to go find how to encrypt it. This is something you have to do when you first format the hard drive for accepting information. So it's not something you can do afterwards, technically. I mean, there are ways to encrypt the data, but the hard drive itself, you have to encrypt right at the beginning. But these days, you're asked that when you first install whatever your operating system is. And I've noticed that Apple is doing that as a routine. They're encrypting it unless you ask them not to. And I think Windows does the same thing. And I've noticed with Linux Mint, installing it for the first time on a computer, it asks you, do you want your hard drive encrypted or not? So that's an example of how that is used.
Well, one thing that I want to just add to that is I've noticed that most new Linux installs, they give you that option very at the very beginning, saying, and they explain to you what you can do. But they actually take it a little farther for your protection. You can actually even have it where it won't, the computer won't boot until you unlock the bootloader. So, and then it has to unencrypt everything to your key. So at the startup, there's a little bit of a delay, maybe 10-15 seconds, but it's getting your computer ready to use. So if you were to lose, or someone was to take your computer unauthorized, the data would be, they couldn't even get the thing to boot. So something to remember, encryption is important, not just for our super secret recording on Sunday, but also to protect your financial and personal data also.
Yeah, good points. So beyond symmetric and asymmetric encryption, there are some cool new cryptographic techniques being developed to handle future threats and offer special features.
Okay, just disclaimer, I'm still learning about these, but these are some of the ones that are seem to be at the forefront. So take that with a grain of salt. We'll discuss this more once I become a expert. Okay, never an expert, but at least I know what the heck I'll talk about. But this stuff was pretty cool. So post-quantum cryptography, or PQC. As of early 2026, PQC is transitioning from a theoretical concern to a mandatory operational reality for many organizations. Unlike traditional asymmetric algorithms like RSA and ECC, that can be broken by future quantum computers, PQC uses mathematical problems believed to be resistant to quantum attacks. Lattice-based cryptography, one of the most prominent PQC families used in new standards like ML-KEM and ML-DSA. It relies on the difficulty of finding the shortest vector into a multidimensional grid lattice. It's code-based and multivariate cryptology. Other mathematical approaches being standardized to ensure long-term data security against quantum threats. So that was from their introduction to PQC. Okay, so So I'm still learning about PQC, but just to give you an idea, it sounded really, really impressive. Of course, I understood about 10% of that. So I'm working on understanding it, but from what I gather, and from the high-level overview, which I had to use AI to explain it in kindergarten terms for me, this is a new type of encryption that is theoretical, but they're going to move it more in to a mandatory operational as, in the future, quantum computers, which are be even more powerful than we have now, it will be resistant to them being able to break the encryption. So they're already planning for this advanced encryption before we even have the quantum computers. And it's all a bunch of math and code and multi-lattice, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, you know as much as I do right now.
So let me see if I get this straight. So we've got the encryption that we're using today, the asymmetric algorithm, mm-hmm. like RSA and ECC, that theoretically could be broken by computers that get more powerful in the future.
Yes.
But we don't have those computers yet. So they're working on it ahead of time. And they're using a much more complex method of encrypting that hopefully will be resistant to even more powerful computers.
Yes.
Is that kind of it? Yeah.
Yes. You got it.
All right. Let's go on to the next one. This is promising to be just as complex to try to describe. So this is homomorphic encryption, or HE. Homomorphic encryption allows users to perform mathematical calculations on encrypted data without ever decrypting it. That sounds a little risky. Here's how it functions. The result of the computation remains encrypted and can only be read by the owner of the decryption key. In 2026, here's how it's used. It is projected that nearly 90% of large enterprises will incorporate HE by 2026 to support secure data analysis in cloud computing, healthcare, and finance. So with this one, you've got encrypted information, and you can multiply it by 15 without ever knowing what the actual value is that you started with or the value that you ended with. You can do that math on it and end up with encrypted data that only the people with the keys can see. I'm having a hard time trying to figure out why you would want that.
Okay, think of it this way. I'm going to use healthcare because I work in healthcare. Say we have your shot records, Larry, of your past immunizations, okay? Mm-hmm. That data is sitting on their server, and it is encrypted with this HE. You're going to your doctor. He uses a program that also is trusted by the main server with HE. But he can now say, let me see if Larry's had the super duper vaccine. And because it's talking in the same language, it knows the key, it can, without ever knowing how to decrypt it because it's always secure, then it's able to find that answer and say, yep, Larry got the version 5 of the super vaccine. He doesn't need anything else. So basically, they're able to exchange data, if I'm understanding this correct, without ever having to decrypt it.
I see.
Yeah. Does that make a little more sense? Because if you have a doctor has a laptop and it's stolen, unless the person knows the encryption key, which is most likely what's going to, they're using And we'll get into this. They're using something they know and something they have. So a password they know and usually some kind of special key, like one of those key fobs that has to be in the computer. So you have to know it's something you have and something you know.
Okay.
So that's basically how it's supposed to work. I'm not going to say I understand it, but that's how I understood it when it was explained to me.
Yeah. So you can use the data that's stored encrypted by querying it or performing math on it or whatever you want to do. So if you have health data, it never gets decrypted. So somebody trying to hack into your computer or has access to your computer, they'll never get to see your health records. But the doctor with the appropriate software can go and get the information out of it that he or she needs to diagnose an illness or look at your medication list or whatever, and get that information without ever taking the entire health record and decrypting it, which is the risky part of this whole thing. So does that sound right?
That sounds right. I'm just going to add this for future reference just so you can see how far they take security and healthcare and even financial companies. Here's an example. They have the HE. You have to have a physical key, you have to have a password, and it has to be sitting on a trusted, secured network.
Mm.
So you can't take that laptop outside. You can add networks that are trusted, but say someone grabs the laptop, which they have in our hospital, and run out the door. The data will not even begin to encrypt. The DB decrypted, or you can't even get any of the information because it's not on secured network that's protected with encryption. You don't have the physical key and you don't have the password. So basically it's useless. He can't, no one can use it.
That's right. Yeah. Multiple layers of security.
Yes. And with healthcare and financial and other stuff like that, it's very important. Okay, so I know we're getting a little crazy, but we're almost done. So quantum cryptography, quantum key distribution. Unlike PQC, which uses complex math on classical computers, quantum cryptology uses the laws of physics to secure communication. So here's the mechanism of how they say this works. It typically uses quantum key distribution, QKD, where protons transmit keys, because the act of observing a quantum system changes its state, and any attempt to intercept the key is immediately detectable. So they've got something called the honey encryption. This technique deceives the attackers using brute force attempts. If an incorrect key is used, the system generates honey, a plausible looking but false data, instead of an error message, making it impossible for the attacker to know if they have successfully guessed the key. I'm getting a headache.
I'm glad this is the introduction.
I know it sounds, we're throwing a lot of acronyms, we're throwing a lot of weird stuff, but bear with us. It all will click together, or I'll have a brain aneurysm trying to figure it out. So anyway, so they have something called a zero knowledge proofs, or ZKP. They love their acronyms. Good gracious. Well, not encryption in the traditional sense. ZKP allows one party to prove to the other that a statement is true. And here's an example. I have enough money for this transaction without revealing the actual underlying data. Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So basically, they're trying to solve problems that are not even existing yet. That's why it sounds so futuristic, because it is. This stuff, but at the rate technology is moving, they have to think outside the box. And, you know, back in the day, you remember, we were all like, oh, RSA is so complicated, I'll never understand it. Now it's everybody pretty much knows that it's a standard and has the high-level basics of how it works. So this is the same thing. We just got to stay ahead of the game.
Okay, well, let's move on to something that might be a little more understandable for folks.
Yeah.
Biometric encryption. This method of encryption binds a cryptographic key directly to a user's biometric data, like a fingerprint or an iris scan. The key can only be recreated when the live biometric is presented, ensuring that the key itself is never stored in a way that it can be stolen.
Basically, why I put this biometric encryption at the end, a lot of this is going to be different things used together. So maybe in the future, you'll use your fingerprint to decrypt something with HE or the PQC, and you'll never really have to understand the whole what's going on. Have you ever been to a place, Larry, that you have to put your finger or palm to unlock?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That's basically what biometric encryption is. It uses your data on your handprint, fingerprint, iris, whatever, to unlock it.
Right. And I have a fingerprint reader on my laptop, as a matter of fact.
Isn't technology great? Okay.
It is.
So now that we've discussed about what we have now, we got future what's coming in the future, and how it might be used with like biometric encryption, palm pads, finger pads, whatever, iris. You might be saying, "Why do I even care about encryption?" This is important. So, as data has become the new gold for criminals, corporations, and governments in 2026, encryption stands as the sole tool for digital security. This mathematical defense is the foundation for keeping our online lives private, ensuring personal information is unreadable to anyone other than the intended recipient.
So let's talk for a minute about protection from hackers and identity theft, and how encryption makes that stolen data useless. Even if a hacker successfully breaches a server or intercepts your Wi-Fi, they only get, quote, ciphertext, a scrambled mess of characters that is impossible to decode without your specific key. So, from a financial and personal safety perspective, encryption secures your banking passwords, credit card numbers, and medical records. In 2025, global cybercrime damages were estimated at $10.5 trillion annually, making encryption a vital barrier against catastrophic financial loss.
Trillion. Holy moly, that's a lot of money.
Trillion with a T, yes.
It's also used at defending against mass surveillance and preventing eavesdropping. Without encryption, service providers, ISPs, and governments can monitor your activity. Encryption limits corporate data mining used for targeted advertising. Any backdoor created by government access is a security flaw that criminals will exploit. So basically, this is to also, if I'm writing, Larry, that I feel like we need to change a recording date to Monday, the government won't be able to know that I've changed it to Monday. It stays between us. So the idea is sound. You don't want people spying on you or watching what you're doing or just trying to get the data so they can serve you ads.
Right. Okay, well, let's look at it from a preserving human rights and free speech perspective. Protecting vulnerable groups is another way to think about that. For journalists, activists, and whistleblowers, encryption is often a matter of life or death, allowing them to communicate in repressive environments without being tracked or censored. This enables us to avoid self-censorship. When people know they are being watched, they often change how they express themselves. Encryption creates a privacy zone that allows for free thinking and open dialogue.
So this avoiding the self-censorship. So let me see if I understand where we're coming with this. Say we have a someone in a repressive fictional government, and they don't like that they have to have peas with their dinner all the time. So they're
okay.
So they're basically talking to other people, say, "I hate peas," but the government can't see what they're saying, so they can be honest. That's their privacy zone. But if they know someone's watching, they're going to say, "I love peas, and I want to eat them all the time because it's our law." Is that kind of...
That's it.
Okay. So you just... So they're able to generally express themselves. So when the person that hates peas is talking to a journalist, that's just between those two people.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So a stupid example, but I think that kind of makes it, at least you know what they're talking about. Ensuring data integrity and anti-tampering. Now, this is an important one. It's all important, but this is kind of important for reasons. So encryption does more than hide data. It also acts as a seal. If an encrypted message is altered by a third party during transit, the decryption process will fail, alerting you that the information has been tampered with. So, an example of this, I'm sending Larry a dollar. Well, I send it to him and he won't decrypt because someone said, "Oh no, I'm changing it to 50 cents." So the keys won't match, basically. So he knows that someone's taken 50 cents of his money. Is that kind of how that works?
That's exactly
okay.
What it is. And what we're doing there is we're maintaining digital trust, which of course is the foundation of the economy. Without the trust provided by encryption, global e-commerce and digital banking would collapse. It creates accountability. It provides authentication, verifying that a message actually came from the person it claims to be from, rather than from an imposter.
Here's some ideas that you can use right now to protect your security. To ensure your data is secure in 2026, try prioritizing services that use end-to-end encryption, E2EE, that same acronym that we discussed earlier in the episode, by default, such as when messaging, you can try Signal, or email, ProtonMail. We're not endorsed by either one of these, but these seem to be the best in class at the moment. If you have some other ideas, or by all means, send them in and we'll share. But when you're browsing, always look for the HTTPS or a lock icon in your browser's address bar to ensure your connection to a website is encrypted. Using these simple but very effective methods will increase and might help protect your sensitive information.
As we get deeper into this, we'll be describing some of the methods and getting into the nuts and bolts, but from an end user perspective, hopefully it gets implemented in a way that it's all transparent to you. If you want to understand all the details of how the encryption works for these quantum computing things that they're doing in the future, that's great. You'll be able to get in there and look, because much of what we're talking about here is done by open source. If you just want to use it and be sure that you are secure, you'll be able to do that as well.
Okay. now that we're at the end of this episode, I want to give you some of my final thoughts. If you're still with us, congratulations. You've made it through the toughest episode that you'll have to listen to on encryption. Introducing the basic concepts and some more advanced ideas was the whole intent to get you comfortable and so you can understand where we're coming from. We'll discuss the nuts and bolts, but you don't have to worry about us getting so technical you're like, where are these guys, rocket sciences? We're never going to get that advanced. We are going to cover the ideas on how it works and discuss it in the easiest way we know. But our main goal is to get you comfortable so that you can be an informed user and you can use programs that have been vetted that are good for your personal data. And also, you can use it to secure your data for future use or when you're transporting it or you're putting on another computer, etc. It's not about keeping anything hidden as much as protecting your privacy.
I think you summarized that very, very well, Bill. And like I said, I hope we can get to the point where all of this just happens in the background and we don't have to worry about it. But we do have to understand what it is we're being told. When somebody says something is encrypted, we can ask the question, well, how is it encrypted? Is it just a password? Is it ZKP? Or is it PQC or E2EE? I mean, yeah. Well, at least you have a passing knowledge right now of some of the terms that may come up in the future and probably will. So we'll, like we've said, we'll get into a little more depth without getting so far down the rabbit hole that you need an advanced degree in cryptography to be able to understand it.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's enough for today.
Okay. Yeah.
My head hurts.
I need more coffee. Okay. So.
Yes. Well, that's a good idea. But in the meantime, our next episode will be another listener feedback episode. And until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe. We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.